Greetings again this evening. It's a beautiful evening. I hope everybody is alert enough that they can take in what I have to share and evaluate it and reject what does not sound right and use what does. Talking about the child's need for acceptance tonight. And some of what I'm going to be talking about is the importance of accepting a child. But that's only going to be a little bit of what I have to share. We're talking about the importance of the child being accepted. What would make it that a child will be accepted? Does the training of the child, does the child itself, herself, himself, and their behavior have anything to do with whether they are going to be accepted in their peer group or by other adults? Or do we let the children be what they want to be and then just go around and tell all the adults to accept them? That might work if your children only ever relate to adults. But they don't. They relate to other children. And not going to work very well to go around telling everybody else's children to accept your child if your child is difficult to accept. So we will be talking about the importance of acceptance, but we will also be talking about what could we do to put our children in a place that other children will want to be with them and play with them, and that other adults will be fine to have them around and help them and associate with them. So to begin with, I'd like to speak a little bit about what acceptance, proper acceptance is and what it is not. I think we have to define that a little bit. Proper acceptance is something like the impartial acceptance that God has for individuals. Something like that. And I know in some ways I'm giving the biggest, most important point right here. From here on out, we'll maybe flesh that out a bit, but really, you could just say that and go home. It is something like the impartial acceptance that God has toward individuals. Acceptance is not based on good behavior, although good behavior makes it a lot easier to accept a child. It's certainly not based, or should not be based, on intelligence or personality, or other particularly favorable characteristics, but rather on the fact that the child is a child of God, and they are a human being. They have not chosen to be placed in our care, whether they're our children as parents or whether they're our students as teachers. Of all the people that made choices before that child came to your classroom, it wasn't the child, probably, that chose to come to your classroom or that chose you as a teacher. There they are. They were put there. And in the early years especially, but not only, even in the adolescent and young teen years, they are quite vulnerable. You can fairly easily damage them or cause them a lot of suffering. I often like to quickly say, though, that they are shockingly resilient as well. And that's a good thing, because if they weren't, we imperfect adults would make it impossible for them to live a productive life with our mistakes. So they are surprisingly resilient, but they are also vulnerable, and it's important to remember that. Every human being needs to feel as though they are part of a social group, especially part of a family. That family unit is very important. And in situations where that's not possible or that's broken up in some way or the other, there are usually consequences to work through from that. This need is so strong that children will do whatever they need to or whatever they can think of to feel accepted by that group. We could go on to talk about peer pressure when children get a little bit older, but it's all the same thing. They want to be in on a group of something. And like I said, usually it's the family. They want to be accepted within their own family, but as they get a little bit older, they also are especially interested in being accepted within their peer group. whatever it takes to do that. And children and youth, children and young people, are not always exactly wise in the methods they choose to be included in that group. And sometimes they actually self-sabotage. They do things to be part of the group that nearly guarantee that the group is going to reject them because whatever they're doing is unacceptable or very hard to live with, very hard to appreciate. The child's need to be accepted by both of their parents is the greatest, followed closely by the need to be accepted by other children. It seems to be in that order usually, but the need is very, very great. Most children cannot describe all of this to you. They can't tell you that it's very important that I'm accepted by my peer group. They just sense that. They just have a feeling of that, and they know, and they strive to, and they want to be. They have a desire to be part of their peer group or part of the family that they don't even understand. I don't believe they do. They just know that that's their feeling about this. They want to be part of it. The absence of that acceptance during a child's development, especially early development, can result in lifelong social, psychological, and emotional challenges. They really can suffer some of the consequences of that, more or less. Not that there's no help to be had, but more or less for a very long time, perhaps for a lifetime. And we're going to see in a bit how this could become a lifelong problem. Proper acceptance starts by proper understanding of the nature of the child when they come to us, whether they come to us as parents or come to us as teachers. We don't want to have our glasses with too much rose tint in them when these children come to us. We need to be realistic. They are children, and what does that mean? I already mentioned that they come to us dependent and vulnerable. They come to us needing considerable training and preparation for life. Very few children figure that out on their own, or figure it out well on their own. So they come needing the training. They come needing the shaping, the teaching. They come already knowing perfectly well how to be angry, greedy, manipulative, and even violent. And some people jerk a little bit the notion that little children are violent. Well, what do you call biting? What, would that be considered violence if an adult tried it? What do you call taking the toy hammer and whacking a child that's younger than them over the head? Is that not violence? They can do this. They have this. They come quite able to do these things. They come to us basically selfish, meaning they're interested in having their own needs met and their own desires met, which I don't know if you think about that a little bit, that's not going to help them be accepted by their peer group very well unless they learn how to be a little bit less selfish somewhere along the line. Because 6-5-year-olds that are all equally selfish and grabbing and graspy and grasping and greedy, this is not going to be a great scenario, and they are not going to accept each other very well. So they come to us basically selfish and not prepared to interact with other children in a peaceful or functional way. It is something we teach them to do, usually. Proper acceptance is not accepting the bad behavior of our toddlers and failing in our primary responsibility of training and disciplining them. That is not what I'm talking about when I say they need to be accepted. And I think most of us are pretty clear-eyed about the fact that you could damage a child by supposedly loving them too much to correct them or such like. I'm not sure that there's a better way to damage a child than to not correct them and to not train them to be less selfish and greedy and to not train them to stop biting. Proper acceptance does not spoil children. It does not do that. Because it comes in tandem with training and somewhat rigid expectations for a certain kind of behavior. And even discipline if that behavior isn't forthcoming. So proper acceptance does not spoil the child. If what we're doing is resulting in a spoiled child, then it's not proper acceptance. It's not what we're doing. Whatever it is we're doing, it's not what we're doing. We accept the child, the children, unconditionally, but we are deeply interested in training them to do well in life, to function well with other human beings. Proper acceptance does not keep a parent or teacher from challenging the child, giving them some work to do that challenges them or is even maybe difficult, assigning them with a responsibility that maybe scares them just a bit at times. Obviously, you need to watch and assess closely whether that's working or not, but still, pushing them or challenging them. Parents and teachers need to communicate on this one, but it's worth remembering that parents, we as parents, send our children to school to learn. That is why we do it, I suppose anyway. I think most parents are thinking that. I would hope so. And if you teach for any length of time, you certainly will have those parents where you have a question about that. You do wonder why they sent their children to school. But be that as it may, if we forget that we sent our children to school to learn and to be trained, and if we as teachers forget that that is why the parents sent the children to us, we will, I don't know, maybe we'll have a glorified daycare or something like that. And I'm not saying that daycare doesn't teach children how to interact with other children. It certainly can and does. But still, accepting a child does not mean that we do not carefully challenge them and give them hard things to do sometimes. I'm thinking about students in school and older children. I'm not so much thinking about two-year-olds here. We parents have shortcomings and need to remain open to the input of others with our children. And you just need to be a little bit older before you'll admit that and agree to that quite quickly. We are delighted to have teachers help us out, as long as those teachers are not doing things that run counter to our wishes for the training of our child. And how would we know whether that's happening or not? How would we know, how would teachers know whether they are doing things that run counter to the parent's interest in that child? I suppose we could talk about effective communication or something like that. There has to be a collaboration. And when that collaboration can take place, you can have a beautiful teamwork where two parties are interested in the training and the welfare of that child, and they're both interested in accepting the child, and they're working together and they're talking with each other so that they understand what the goals are and what we're wanting, what we're looking for. In all of that, I have to say it's important that teachers remember that the children are not theirs, unless they are. I did teach my own children, unless they are. But generally, they are not. But if the children are not your children, then remember that they are not your children, is what I'm saying. And there are times when we as teachers have a brainstorm about a child and exactly what they need to be fixed, what miracle we have for them so that they can read like everyone else, or what idea we have that would correct the deficiency we see. And we can find ourselves telling ourselves that if only the parents would let me do this or that or the other thing with their child. Well, that's an interesting concept to have, considering that it's not your child. If only the parents would allow me to do what I want to with this child, then I could do X, Y, Z. That may be true, but it's rarely the case. We're probably dreaming about something, or we are considering our set of skills to be maybe a little bit more powerful than they are. Parents often have wonderful and great wishes for their children, and the reality of the child that they were given is something a little bit different. Some parents have dreams of their children excelling at school and being exceptional in that way, and that's not a bad dream to have, perhaps, but the likelihood that you will be given a child where that doesn't come together easily or at all. And then what are you going to do? Then we're really talking about the challenge of accepting that child, because they are perhaps not able to meet your high dreams and goals for them. So as teachers, we need to be careful. We should be optimistic. I think we should believe that children, that most children can learn. Maybe all children can learn something, and many can even excel. But when we have this notion that success means that all of my students are excelling at this bar academically, we're headed for trouble pretty quickly. Because that child that struggles to read or struggles to focus or is fidgety or finds a math fact form to be something a lot worse than the dentist, they are never going to perform at some kind of high level. This is reality. What are you going to do about that? And one could start a new topic there and have another 45 minutes, but I'm just asking that question somewhat rhetorically to say, when it comes to acceptance, if you're not careful, you almost automatically don't favor that child because, well, they're not so bright. They're probably not going to make you look like a great teacher. And the only question I have in that scenario is, what made you think that you had to look like a great teacher? So be careful with the ego on this, because students who find learning and academic work a little more difficult can really challenge your notion about whether you're a great teacher or not, because they don't excel like some of the other students do. Finding a proper way of relating to the needs of particular children and their particular struggles takes considerable cooperation between the parents and the teachers and the school board. And God forbid that a child finds out that there's a bit of a fight going on over them between parents and school board and teachers. I'm not sure what that all communicates to a child, but it can't be good. It can't be good. Now I'd like to think about what I'm referring to as beyond acceptance. Not just simple, you should accept the child because it's very important for their development. The number one factor in whether a child feels accepted or not is whether the adults around them pay attention to them. Be that positive or corrective. Whether the adults around them pay attention to them. Small talk is great here. Asking them how their day was at school can feel like something you're doing every night on the way home, and you get the same answer. And when they are 14, you get the same answer. It's going to be something like, And yet, the fact that you asked is paying attention to them. Even if they are not in the mood to give you three paragraphs about that right at that point, they're just thinking about after school snack. You still asked. And they don't really understand that that was important to them, but it is. It is important. So paying attention to them is important. And this is a tremendous challenge for busy adults and for families where there are maybe there are five children in school, and maybe there are two teenagers that have a job. And there's a lot going on, and paying attention to the children is a real challenge for us. But that still remains the number one factor in whether a child feels accepted or not. Do the adults around them pay attention to them? And this can be both positive and corrective attention. Children that are never disciplined, never given that corrective attention, are missing attention just as much as the child that never hears, "That was a great job." They are missing that attention, and they mind it, suffer from it. Children need to be accepted into their peer group in order to develop well. And our job as parents, and later as teachers, is to teach and train children to behave in such a way that their peer group does accept them and does want to play with them. And I say play because this starts when they are young. If you have a child that is nasty, and the biting hasn't stopped, and the stealing toys hasn't stopped, and you take them to a gathering of friends where there are other toddlers and other 2 and 3 year olds there, what happens? Is that child accepted into among the other 3 year olds? No. They are not. And when they get a little bit older and they're still nasty, they are not accepted by their friends. And we can't go around recommending to the parents of our child's peers that they should teach their children to play nicely and be accepting if our child is difficult to play with. I like to think of it this way: as parents and as teachers, we are essentially a proxy, gentle but firm, but a proxy for the real world and the real social environment that they are headed for. We prepare them for life, for the outside world. And if we do not train them to behave in acceptable ways, we have not prepared them for that, because they will, whether we like it or not, be rejected for that bad behavior by their peers, and even worse, by other adults. Think about it. A child that has been taught to behave himself decently has the possibility of an uncle or another somebody, a teacher, wanting to do something with them or help them with a project or share something with them or talk with them. If they are a brat, don't be surprised if adults find it hard to spend time with them. And I'm talking about other adults, not just the parents. The parents probably will anyway. But other adults. Think about the possibility of a man at church being interested or open to helping your 16-year-old with a project because he's a pleasant, responsible, respectable 16-year-old to work with. What has the 16-year-old gained? Perhaps you're a teacher, as a parent, as a father, and there's another man at church who builds sheds or does some carpentry work, and if your 16-year-old is a respectable young man and an interesting young man to be around, that other adult in the community may be more than willing to help your 16-year-old build something. What have you gained? If he's irresponsible and disrespectful, it's unlikely that other adult in the community is going to come along and offer to help him with a building project, because the young man gets on his nerves, perhaps. So it is not only that we want our children to be accepted by their peer group, that is important, but the value of them also being accepted by other adults in the community and people actually are interested in and offer to do something with them, this is extremely important and valuable. When that happens, it's a beautiful thing. And that young man or that young lady benefits from something that likely would not have come their way if they had been difficult to relate to. We teach through guidance and discipline what is acceptable behavior and what is not. And we do that starting quite early. We teach them that they are not the center of the world and everybody does not need to pay attention to them all the time. I can't think of anything that makes a child and then a young adult more difficult to accept than the one that is narcissistic and everything has to go their way. They need to be at the center of attention for everything, and they'll do whatever they need to control the situation so that the attention comes their way. That is not appreciated by anybody. And many times we actually have to teach our children that they are not the most important thing in the world. And I don't know when you think that starts, but I'm guessing that most of you would assume that starts rather young, way before the child really knows that anything like that is happening. We teach them to play, and to play fair, to play honestly with other children, to be able to give and take. We teach them not to be greedy and grabbing. And again, this all happens very early, or it doesn't happen. We teach them to give that toy back. Or to give one of theirs to that other child when we're together with other friends. We teach them not to hurt others. We do not let our child get away with hurting other children. And I know we get to visiting and the hurting goes on and there's a wailing and a carrying on in the other room. And we were having such a fine time. It's a bit of a pain to go find out what happened, right? But if you had a child that was of the age where they could have been doing the hurting, you should find out if it was your child that did it. You should find out what happened. Because young children can learn that it is not okay to hurt other people if they don't learn it. I have seen boys that are 10 and they are more than willing to physically hurt their friends, to pinch them, to punch them, to pull their ears, whatever. And you have to wonder when you see a preteen physically hurting other people around them, you really have to wonder what happened. One thing you don't have to wonder about is whether they're going to be accepted into their peer group. No, he's mean. I'm not going to spend time with him. Sometimes you hear cases where 10-year-olds don't want to go visit this family. And you're curious, well, they have children your age, what's going on? And you find out, no, he's mean. She's mean. She does this or that when we're together. And it can sometimes come as a surprise. You had no idea this was happening. Children, some children, don't like squealing on their friends. They won't tell you that other child's mean, but you can catch on after a bit. Something's going on here. They don't like to be in each other's company. What's happening? Or maybe, shockingly, we discover that our child was being mean and we get the report from somewhere else. And then I would hope that we would take that very, very seriously. We should. We teach them to accept correction. And parents, of course, play a critical role here when our children need correction at school. We teach them to accept that, to take it. We teach them good manners. When you're beside children that have essentially no manners at the table, it can be hard on your appetite. And so it's going to be hard to want to sit beside them and have a conversation with them or pay attention to them because the food's everywhere. That's just one example. There are many other good manners as well. It could include being respectful enough to say thank you or please or things like that. But we teach them good manners. We also teach our children to stop whining because nobody likes it. Nobody likes the child that's whining and has this high whining nasal voice about everything. It just gets old and people do not like it. Friends don't like it. Adults don't like it. So we teach them to stop whining. It can be a lot of work sometimes, but we work at it. We teach them to take care of themselves and their things. When they become young adults and adults, an adult or young adult that is slovenly is at a disadvantage. If they weren't taught to take care of themselves and to take care of their things, they're careless about their things. Everything's just... I would talk about training children about keeping their bedrooms tidy, but somebody might ask me about my 19-year-old son. We're still teaching there. We teach them also, and maybe especially, to take care of other people's things. The child that will get a prized possession from another child and break it just to see what happens. Are they going to be accepted by their peer group? I don't understand that impulse, but I've seen it happen. They know that that pencil, that ruler, whatever it was special to their friend. Why would you run in there and then go laughing away? I don't know what that is, but I know it's something that you would want to address rather directly and forcefully if you see your child doing that. Or if you're a teacher and you see one child doing that to another child. This is serious business. And it's not just because there's a child that lost their pencil that they got from grandma. That's a problem. You need to address that. There's a little something to work on there usually. But it's more, there's a child that doesn't understand that if they keep on doing these kinds of things, they won't be accepted any better than they are now. And it may be that they've done it because they already have been partly rejected by their peer group for this kind of behavior, and they do more of it because, like I said earlier, most children don't really have a good sense of how you fix it if you don't feel like you're fitting in. They will often do more of the thing that cut them off if there isn't an adult there to redirect that thing. We teach them to respect other people's privacy and personal space. This is very important with little children. You are not allowed to just go rushing through that closed door. You knock. And that may seem like a minor thing. I don't think it is. Because that translates into a lot of other stuff. Can you just go plowing into somebody else's privacy and get away with that? Is it going to be appreciated? No, it's not. It's disrespectful. We teach them to stand tall, to speak loudly and clearly to others, and especially to speak clearly to adults. And that takes a lot of work, but it is valuable. There is not an adult out there that doesn't appreciate a young boy or girl that can speak up and say something that they can understand and have a sensible conversation instead of acting like they don't know how to talk. Well, I could say other things too, but I'm going to summarize this by saying that, in other words, we try to train our children not to be obnoxious. This is part of what it means to having our children experience acceptance. It's the way into that. An important way into that. When our children are taught these things from early on, as I said, even other adults in their surroundings will be happy to be around them. And this is invaluable. Imagine a community where young people and even younger children benefit from multiple adults in the community, at the school, in the community, in the extended family. There are uncles and aunts that would even dare have them overnight. And so on and so forth. Perhaps one good way to think of it is this way. If you as a teacher or a parent don't like your child's behavior, you don't like what your child's doing, what makes you think that others will? And we could perhaps say that don't let your children do things that you don't like. Because if you don't like it, who will? If you don't like the way they're behaving, who will? If you let your child behave in ways that will cause other children to stay away from them or adults to have little to do with them, you will really set them up for failure. And they will usually react to that with more bad behavior, often. And some of these ways of thinking, perhaps ways of thinking that nobody likes them and they aren't worth anything and those kinds of negative thought processes that can come from not being accepted, often keep them from breaking out of that place of failure and rejection and bad behavior. And we see them behaving in ways that makes it difficult for them to have a job. We see them behaving in ways that makes it difficult for them to have meaningful relationships. And they struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle. So I hope I didn't paint a grim picture. I hope that I was giving ideas that could potentially be applied to the training and the teaching of our children that we actually could do and that will make a difference for them and will put them in a place where they really are accepted because they are acceptable in their behavior. And we're not talking about whether they're super intelligent or beautiful or whatever that means. We're talking about whether they behave in ways that others are open to associate with them. It turns out all of us need that connection to other people. And if we behave in ways, and if our children end up behaving in ways that that connection gets cut off in any way, there's a huge loss. A huge loss. Just to conclude, perhaps here's what a proper or functional accepting might look like. Putting grace together with truth. we're not going to let you behave that way. You must go back and apologize, or you must go to your penny bank or your wallet and take out enough to repair that item, or you must... Grace and truth together. Patience and authority together at once. There's patience, but there's also authority. This is not allowed. Kindness and discipline. We are kind, but there will be consequences if you do that again. And then there are consequences if they do that again. Compassion and high expectation, perhaps especially for the child that struggles with the learning part of school. Compassion. Have compassion, but it's very difficult. Those children sometimes do not like going to school at all. They would love to please their teacher with a high grade, and it doesn't happen. And then their teacher turns around and tells their mom that he seems to be kind of lazy. Again, that's another topic. But compassion and high expectations. See what they can do. Push them, but also understand and be compassionate with those who struggle to meet those expectations. Perhaps step in and help them meet those expectations, getting alongside them. Secure unconditional love put together with rules, with guidelines. These are things that are acceptable, or these are things that are not allowed. And most of all, attention, especially positive, but not only positive attention in whatever the situation is and whatever the child's strengths and weaknesses are. I love this picture in Luke chapter 2, verse 40. Luke chapter 2, verse 40, and the child grew, speaking of Jesus, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. And that's a beautiful picture of a child, of the child Jesus. But then in verse 52 we have, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. That was the result. And if we want to dream big about how our children will do in life, I think that would be a wonderful dream to have, that they would be acceptable to both God and man. Thank you.